And now, back to Vantage Point with Nick Lawrence on 98.5 WXPM and WXPM.org.
Everybody, welcome or welcome back to Vantage Point, as promised, and I've been telling you about this for a while. We've been talking about our guest, Seth Reines, for over a week now, and telling you that he was going to be with us and talking to us about his book called Real Talk for Teens, Real Talk for Teens, Jumpstart Guide to Gender Transitioning and Beyond. So, okay, I think we have him back, so let's go here and see if he's there. Seth, are you there?
Hello.
You're on the air, Seth.
How are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm great. Good to speak with you.
Yeah, it's good to speak with you as always. You know, I think it's, what, it's been about 2 years or so since the last time we talked, maybe a year and a half or so ago?
Something like that. Something like that. Time flies.
It does. Even if you're not having fun, it flies, right?
So, yeah,
Seth,
you're right.
So talk to us. The book is called Real Talk for Teens, Jumpstart Guide to Gender Transitioning and Beyond. But, you know, people are always interested in the story, in the story behind the book, let's say. So talk to us about your story, Seth, because it's a topic that many people do not understand or they have misconceptions about. Tell us a bit about your story.
Well, I'm not young, so I lived through a time, and maybe most of your audience can relate, but I mean, I lived through a time when there was no internet, you know, no cell phones, rotary dial, and Dewey Decimal at the library. And I'm going back to the 60s, so I knew something was different with me, and I lived in Baltimore. And my mother, I'm not sure quite clearly how this happened. I think in our day they used to do IQ tests in school. And, you know, my mother would say, you know, my IQ can't be 80 one year and 140 the next, you know. So I guess in those days they took you privately to test your IQ. Well, this is what I was told. Now, it could be a totally different story, but this is the story I got when I was a kid.
Sure.
And they took me to Johns Hopkins, where I sat in front of Dr. John Money, and anybody that knows the history of, you know, transgender people, et cetera, he was the pioneer back in the day. Now, I didn't know who he was. He was just a man to me. And, of course, they tested my IQ, but one of the things they did, I was about 9 years old, and he held up two pictures to me, a penis and a vagina. Now, I don't think you can get away with that today. And, of course, then there was no HIPAA either.
Right.
And he asked me if I knew what they were, which one I had, and which one I wanted, right? So the first two were easy, but the third one was difficult, you know, because I couldn't say, you know, that my penis was missing. Now, I'm 9 years old, and where's that coming from? Because trust me, there's no internet. There's no TV.
Right.
It's coming right from me.
Yep.
And I was afraid, you know, to tell him that because, like I said, there's no HIPAA. And, you know, a kid at that age knows that, you know, what to say and what not to say. And I didn't want my parents coming down on me. And so, I mean, they tested my IQ, and he was kind enough. This is what my mother said, to say that if I ever dated, I would be much older. So, of course, I dated, but not the way my mother would like me to date. But anyway, that being said, I realized, because I was a smart kid and I'm a smart person, that I'd have to figure a way to run my life. I wasn't sure how to do that as a 9-year-old, but I knew that I have to just try and do what I could to satisfy the talking in my brain. Everybody lives with mental chatter. You never get rid of it. I don't care who you are and how old you are. It's a question of how you handle it or how you, you know, ignore it or what you do. And this was something that was always gnawing at me. And, I mean, at least I can say in those times, I remember my father saying to my mother, let her do what she wants. you know, I remember, I just talked about this the other day. I remember conversations at the table saying, boy, you know, you want me to start a baseball team so that you can play with the boys? And, you know, you look at it today and it sounds like nothing, but in those days it was a lot,
I'm sure.
And so I had to figure out my own life, and it was a life of definitely introversion. I learned to keep myself busy because of curiosity. I learned all the sports. I learned all the musical instruments. I did what I could do to keep my mind busy. Didn't have a lot of friends in school. And even through college, you know, because don't forget, we had a dress code in those days, too.
Yeah.
You couldn't come to school dressed like a slob, like half these kids do today. You know, girls had to wear skirts or whatever. And this wasn't a parochial school where, you know, with uniforms. And boys wore jeans. And I was very jealous of that. I couldn't get my skirt off fast enough. And so I had to live with what life handed me.
So,
and
Seth,
I think
Seth, I want to back up here a second. I'll certainly give you an opportunity to say
sure.
all this stuff. So maybe I missed this, but the reason you went to John Hopkins, you said they had an IQ test, but why did they take you? And you were a 9-year-old girl right at the time.
Well, they took me because they thought I was distracted in school. That's
okay.
What I'm telling you. This is the story I'm getting.
Sure.
Because I remember, you know, taking spelling tests, and I would write upside down, and I'd write with this hand and that hand. I was bored. Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess they were trying to figure out what the deal was. And they also, I don't know if they still give it now, but they gave the MMPI test, the Minnesota Multiple Personality Test, of which one of those was the test if you were homosexual. And I was smart enough taking that test to say, you know, you just asked me that question. You just asked me that question. So you rephrase it. You just asked me that question. And I could figure out where they were going with that. And so I lied on it because, again, I didn't want that coming back to my mother, you know, because how much do you know as a 9-year-old? But I knew enough.
Right.
So
Seth, kids, in general, people don't question their gender identity. So you were already questioning that, but you're saying...
Well, I'm questioning it because you now know the term for it, but
right.
I didn't know the term for it.
Right.
Right. I just knew. I remember on my 7th birthday waking up, looking out the window and saying, oh, man, I wish I was a boy. I mean, I remember that so distinctly. It's amazing what you remember, what you don't in your life, especially if you've lived as long as I have at this point. But the reality is my mother taught me one good thing, and I don't think it was so much for just that particular incident or just where they came from, but she taught me how to grow alligator skin. Because I don't care who you are, life is tough, as we well know, have seen in the last 2 years, never mind everything else.
Did you have brothers and sisters, or were you an only?
I had a sister who was a couple years older.
Okay.
And but, I mean, we were night and day different, right? Just night and day different. But she taught me how to do that. And she taught me how to, you know, if you get in a conflict, you figure it out. I'm not rushing in there to help you. I'm not going to do it. And you know what? Some of those little things that she taught me as a child was able, you know, for me to be able to cut through all the stuff in life and figure out how I was going to carve my life and what was I going to do with my life. And so for the longest time, that's how I lived until I figured out that I could actually legitimately transition. And believe me, transgender people have been around for hundreds of years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they did it, you know, on the sly or however they could do it, you know, decades ago compared to where this scenario sits today.
How long, Seth, did you, I try to say this in a way, how long did you act as a girl? How long did you dress as a girl? How long was
not
that?
Not ever. Not ever.
Oh, not ever. Okay.
You know, I mean, in the sense that I wore a skirt to school, but I couldn't get it off in time to put a T-shirt and jeans on. And every time we would go out somewhere, my mother would say, you got to put a dress on. You're embarrassing your father. And every time they'd go away on trips, they want me to go. And as I got older, I said, I'm not going because I knew what that meant. And I just never went. I couldn't do it. And I couldn't get away. I couldn't get away from home fast enough, not because of my parents. Okay. But because I could do what I wanted and I didn't have to answer or have somebody see me up the block and say, you know, I saw your daughter the other day and this is what she was doing or what, you know, because Baltimore's a small town and being Jewish, it's even a smaller town. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and it was tough. you know, because my father was pretty well known in Baltimore. And so I couldn't get away fast enough so I could live my life. It's not like I was smoking and doing drugs. I just wanted the peace of mind to be me.
Were they embarrassed by you at all? Did they try to keep you out of society, or they kept trying to make you, quote, a girl, girly girl?
I don't know if they were embarrassed, but, you know, if we would go somewhere, like out to dinner or something, I'd have to, you know, wear a skirt or something. It could have been, they could have been embarrassed, but they never said that to me. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, I remember one of the last times, I guess I was in college actually. So now I'm older, and my dad used to go to Pimlico Racetrack, and he'd always dress up. He's one of those guys that always had the tie and the jacket, and we go, and I used to love going with him. And I was wearing jeans or something like that, jeans and a shirt. And I guess he met a couple people, and he introduced me, right? And I didn't hear about this later from my mother, who said to me, you know, a day or two later, your father was embarrassed by the way you were dressed. Mm. Now, I'm already in my 20s, and at that point, I don't give a damn,
right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, I felt bad. I felt bad for that. But like I said, the freedom that I got to a degree was to get away from town. Not so much them, but I just didn't want them to have the backlash.
Sure, I understand. So would you have been considered as a kid? Would you have been considered what we called a tomboy? Were you a girly girl looking girl? Were you
No. They probably would have called me a tomboy without a doubt. And that's probably one of the things that money may have said to my parents, oh, she'll grow out of it.
Ah.
You know, like I said, I'm 68 years old now. I some days I feel it, but most of the days I'm like, how did I get over here?
But
you know, that was probably a kinder way of saying it, because back then there was still a lot of exploration. There was still a lot going on. I mean, one of the ruinations of money came in the 90s. You know, every work that he did or didn't do came down to a case of twins that they botched the circumcision, and they decided to cut the penis off and make that one of those twins a girl. And they said, we'll socialize this child as a girl. It was a famous, famous case.
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, that person committed suicide, because the reality is, and this is the hardest thing for people to grasp, and that's the reason I speak about it and chose to speak about it. You can take all the hormones you want. You can do all the surgery you want. But who's taking care of your mind?
Yeah,
okay, because you still, and the longer you live in a body that you believe is not how you identify, I don't want to say damage, but it's a lot more baggage that you're dragging around with you, and how to figure out how to negotiate around it. Because again, everybody has mental chatter, and you have to learn to deal with it.
So, Seth, a couple things here, and again, any question that I ask you is not a gotcha or any of those things. I can't speak
Nick,
for the audience.
We've been around the block. We've been around the block.
Right. I mean, I know. So, you know what I'm asking? I forgot what I was going to ask you. I mean, what should we know? What should we know about a kid who's struggling with their identity? What should people recognize? What should they know about that?
Well, okay. So here's a couple things. So let me just explain this. Sexual orientation is different than gender identity.
Okay.
And the reason I'm going through the 101s a little bit, because I don't know who in your audience knows it, they don't know. So when your child is somewhere between 18 months and 3 years of age, they already know who they are. And they're not getting up and grandstanding, but they know who they are. And there are some kids, and I've experienced it with a couple kids up here, that I've helped hundreds and hundreds of families. You know, a kid may say, my name's not Mary, it's Marty, you know, or, you know, no, I'm not wearing that dress. You know, I want to wear these pants, or no, I want to wear this dress, or whatever. Whatever they're saying at those little young ages is extremely very pure, you know, because where are they getting tainted that early? And so you have to sit back and you have to wonder. And so people, you know, it's usually sometimes embarrassment from the parents. They don't want to deal with it, or, you know, they just, it'll go away. And sometimes it does. I mean, sometimes it will go away. But the one thing I can tell you, for people who are listening, when a child is transgender, you have to listen to three things. They're very persevering. They're very consistent with what they're doing. And they're insistent about it. So it's not like, you know, you think you can sort of change their mind, let's do this and do that, and they come right back to that. They come right back to it, all the time. It's not like somebody has a bicycle and they play with it for 5 minutes and then they're on to the next thing. If a child has got something rambling in their head because there's something bothering them, they are on the dime every single minute to the point where the parents, it's ad nauseum. And so that's a key sign. It's a key sign that there is something, you know, that needs to be looked out. Now, of course, Philadelphia, you have CHOP. They're one of the best. I'm on the board over there at the Gender Development and Sexuality Clinic, and they're one of the best.
Yep.
And that's where you should take your kid. They're not going to do anything when they're little. They just want to talk to you, see what's going on, see how you make your life easier for parents. You know, when they're young, so you put them in a dress. Listen, when a child is young, before they go through puberty, you can cut their hair or grow their hair, put them in a dress or put them in pants, and no one's going to know if that's a boy or a girl because the sexuality characteristics haven't come in till puberty. Now, when you talk about sexual orientation, which is what I said earlier, that's when you're attracted to someone, okay? So, and that's usually puberty, maybe before puberty. It's hard to say. Puberty today, when I grew up, puberty was 12, 13. Today, kids are puberty 7, 8 years old.
They are.
I don't know. Is that the hormones that are in their food? I have no idea. Okay, but what they usually do with those children is they block their puberty, which they've been doing for decades, so that the child can go through puberty at what we consider puberty age, 12 or 13. So they block puberty, and once they stop taking the pill or the injection, puberty just goes on. And they've been doing that for decades. But what people have to understand, if someone says, well, my kid's gay or they're attracted here or there, that's different. That's totally different. And the simplest way to explain that to your audience is gender identity is who you go to bed as, and sexual orientation is who you go to bed with.
With.
It's two different things. Who you identify as a person yourself has nothing to do with your attraction. So in other words, if you're transgender, you could be straight and you can be gay. You know what I mean? And now in today's world, there's polyamorous and there's, you know, people that are binary and they one day they feel like this, one day they feel like that. There's a lot going on. The spectrum is tremendous. They've just never talked about it.
Mm-hmm. So, Seth, would you say... And again, I, you know, like you say, we've been around the block together for a while, knowing each other in this regard. But would you say that people would say that's a mistake of nature when somebody has a body that's one way and a psychology that's the opposite?
You know what? I can't even broach that with you, Nick, because right now, whatever people are believing in science in this world, you know, they can write their own story. I just know one thing. They still haven't been able to figure out the mind. You know, they say they have, and you can medicate and you can do this. I mean, I'm not too long thinking that when someone was a little off, they got locked away for good in an institution.
I'm sure.
Just because they were a little off. So it's you have to let it play out, because if it's something that's quote unquote a phase, it'll play out. It'll change. It will change. And they don't do, and this is one thing I want to correct, because when I hear people say this now, I know this is either the far, far left saying something or the far, far right saying something. They don't do surgeries on children. The only thing that happens with surgeries on children, which I will tell you the LGBTQ community is obsessed with and has been fighting for years, is intersex children, and there's more per 100 than you would believe. And of course, most people don't know it because it's not their child, right? You go in, you have your kid, and you go home. You don't know what the hospitals see, you know, every single day when babies are born. So, what we fight for is, and 9 times out of 10, it's making a boy a girl because the penis isn't totally developed. Because it's easy, you cut it off, you fix it, you go about your business. I mean, speaking surgically,
right.
But again, we get to that same point where our community says, don't do anything, leave it alone. And when the child grows up, when they're 15 or whatever they are, and they become who they become as a person, then if you have to do surgery or something because it doesn't match the way they feel, then you do that. But they don't just go around cutting off things and adding things for little kids. They don't do that. They don't cut breasts off. I mean, it's, you know, at that point, if you're, God forbid, you're doing that, the child is already, the family already knows that that child has been transgender since they were 8, since they were 6, since they were 10. This isn't like you walk in one day and say, my girl thinks she's a boy. Tomorrow I want to have surgery. It doesn't happen, okay? And I can tell you it does not happen in the circle of the reputable doctors that I know in the Northeast and quite a bit across the country. Uh-huh. I can't tell you that somebody in the backwoods somewhere isn't doing something.
Sure.
You know, but in general, no, it doesn't, because they realize the mind is what they're after to see what's going to happen physically.
So, Seth, are there any stats on to whether or not there are more girls that transition to be guys or guys that transition to be girls? Is there any stat on that?
No, I don't know the stats. I used to know them, but at some point for me, it doesn't really matter. Because the only thing that I would say is where there's a crucial piece, and I think that you can understand that, is when men transition to women, and I use the term men because they're 18 now and they've gone through puberty, right? That's a hard transition. I can't speak to it because I'm not a man transitioning to a woman, but right. What I can tell you from all the people I know, it's a very hard transition to make, because once you go through male puberty, you're growing the beard, okay? The voice is already lowered. And maybe you're now 6 feet tall, you know, whatever it may be. And so when you now try to feminize as a man who identifies as a woman, it's not an easy job. And I always try to remind people that if someone is in that scenario and they're going out in public, it takes everything they have to walk out of their house, just to go to the supermarket, for example, and not be identified. So your best case scenario is to blend, so nobody looks at you. That's what you want. That means you're successful. It takes everything. And people don't understand that. So they're not going to be out there doing things they shouldn't be doing. All they want to do is live their life and just be who they are. And I know the world has a hard time accepting it. I get it. You know, I get it. But you know what? There's a lot of million other things in the world that we have a hard time accepting, and we either do or we don't. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's very, very hard. And that's that man in the dress that everybody is so concerned about. And 99% of the time, it's just someone who doesn't understand makeup, can't put it on properly, is doing the best that they can, trying to get the help that they can to just go out and be a human being in life. The man in the girl's bathroom, what's happening.
Yeah, I want to get to that topic, but I'm going to tell everybody who we're talking to. I want to take a little break, break for conversation. Folks, we're talking to Seth Reines. The phone lines are open. You can ask him. We've been talking about this before. People have made comments about, and now we have somebody who can actually give us the information that we need to have. So why don't you pick up the phone, give him a call. He's willing to deal with any of the comments and questions you might have. As always, say, be respectful about it. It's not an easy topic for people to talk about, but it's certainly an important one and is growing more important every day as we begin to accept people more so for who they are, at least we try to hope that people are doing that. The name of the book is called Real Talk for Teens, Jumpstart Guide to Gender Transitioning and Beyond. Our guest is Seth Reines. His website is his name, Seth Reines, RAINESS.com. You may want to check it out. There's some great videos on there. We're going to take a short break. I need to do a station ID right now. We'll be back right after that. We'll play a tune and we'll be back with our guests in just a moment. In the meantime, pick up the phone. Give us a call. Have the courage of your convictions. People talk about this stuff all the time. When you have an opportunity to discuss it, don't back away from it. That's why we do this show the way we do it here. This is always an honest show about the way people feel and think about stuff. That's what it's supposed to be, and that's what we do there. I don't think there are any questions that are, outside the mainstream here. If you want to ask him a question, you want to talk about this, don't hesitate to do it. 610-956-9976, 610-956-WXPN. We'll be back right after this.
Broadcasting from the Goose Pond Center Studios and with facilities at Spring Hollow Golf Club, this is WXPM LP 98.5 FM Phoenixville.
When I was young, never needed anyone. And making love was just for fun. Those days are gone. Living alone. I think of all the friends I've known. But when I dial the telephone, nobody's home. Sometimes I feel so insecure, and love so distant and obscure remains the cure.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. Welcome if you're just joining us. You're listening to Vantage Point here on WXPM 98.5 FM, WXPM.org. Our special guest is Seth Reines. He's the author of Real Talk for Teens. His website is his name, Seth, S-E-T-H, Reines, R-A-I-N-E-S-S.com. Seth, I am back with you. I want to talk a little bit about what you see the role that media plays. People think that because we foresee a lot more of these images today, that media actually can influence a child to be confused about themselves. Is that so or not, in your opinion?
It depends on what kind of media you're talking about. If you're talking about the news, well, that's a whole nother ball of wax there. But I think, at least from what I've seen, and I've been out there talking now for over 10 years, so, and it's come a long way in 10 years. I think, like, for example, YouTube has helped a lot of these kids because, see, the thing that I didn't have, I had a mirror, but there was nobody to mirror, okay? And some of these kids now, there's a lot of kids out there talking about their journey, how they feel, or whatever it is, and these kids identify with them. Now, look, if you have one kid that's going to be brainwashed into thinking it, so be it. That kid's going to be brainwashed into thinking anything in their life. But what I can tell you from my experience, you know, let's say on the basis of 100 people, because I don't know how to really give you the stats. I don't think I've run into one or two people that were sorry that they transitioned and turned back. And now the media will tell you a lot of people are detransitioning. Maybe you'll find one person or two people. But usually what happens is it's a long journey. It's a marathon. It's not a 100-yard dash. You're not going to go out and start taking testosterone or estrogen and right away grow breasts or grow a beard. It doesn't happen. Life doesn't happen that way, and this doesn't happen that way. And could somebody be influenced? Yeah. But what I can tell you, if it is, I'd like to meet that person because I haven't met them. But the thing that concerns me the most, and even with these last 2 years of lockdown, that's even worse, okay, is that a lot of trans kids, there's no decision on this. It's yes or no. There is no gray area. If a family is adamant about not allowing their child to transition, because maybe, you know, they're not educated, and that's what I deal with. I deal with a lot of people my age who didn't get that education. You know, we didn't have it. Or we got misinformation for sure back then. These kids will commit suicide at a rate so fast, you know, like 43% compared to the national stats on just normal suicide.
And I was going to ask you that question because I think that is an issue that people need to be aware of, that when somebody's in that much conflict and they're not accepted, their only alternative is to think that they're not worth it and there's no reason to be here.
Well, that's a piece of it too, but now you had the lockdowns. It made it worse. Okay, because some people were locked into the house, you know, they didn't go to school, they didn't do this or whatever, locked in the house with families that really hate them, that don't like that, then they can't get away from them. There was a lot of that going on, okay, and there's a lot of other abuse, and that's a whole other story. But, you know, when a child is so conflicted, and of course, when they're young, they're honest. They haven't been taught to lie yet. Okay, they're just telling you straight out, and sometimes in situations you don't want them to say, and you cover your kid's mouth because they embarrass you, but they just tell you like it is, and parents get offended by it. But if you just listen to the child, and it's hard because you know they've got to catch up to the parents, especially if it's just like they're getting whacked over the head with something like this, and they don't learn that from A to Z in one night. I can't begin to tell you, from doing support groups and doing all types of talks, how many parents come in, they're worried, they're upset, what am I going to do? You know, this is my child's life, I want them to have a good life. Well, you know what? What happens if you have a child that's born and doesn't have a hand? What happens if you have a child that's born that's dragging a leg? Everybody's going to have a situation in their life that could possibly put them in a place where, you know, people are going to pick on them, right? Yep. You got to teach them to have strength. You got to be behind your kid, and you have to be educated. And parents are usually, believe it or not, if your kid's in their teens, the last ones to know. Well, they usually are for most stuff anyway, but they're the last to know. And they tell their friends first because they're trying to get their posse around them, you know, for support. Because after all, if you're 14 and you tell your parents you're transgender and they say, if you do this, I'm going to kick you out of the house, because there are people that think that way. Here's the situation. You put a 14-year-old on the street. I'm not even going to put COVID in the picture because that's going to come and go. But you put a 14-year-old in the street, and what are they going to be doing for a living? Tricking? Drugs? Sex trading? Because a 14-year-old can't go get a job and support themselves in an apartment. So that age, and they're teenagers. Look, teenagers are wild, whatever they're doing in their life. It's not just being transgender. So, you know, and they're very much influenced. So what I say to parents, if you even suspect that your child may be that way or this way, take them to the people, especially if you're around this listening area and they're young, take them to CHOP. Dr. Hawkins is a great psychologist that runs that center, and at least you can get some clear, straight information, not going down the one-way tube on the internet in the wrong direction. But you can get a lot of information from people who are out there, and I don't mean activists, because I'm not an activist, I'm an advocate. out there in the trenches just trying to tell people the truth. Because, you know what? People can learn what they want. They can believe what they want. But when I'm usually finished talking, I'm telling you the truth. And now you know the truth. Mm-hmm. It's up to you what you want to do with it.
Well, the reason, I ask you about the media thing is because there are people on certain political sides that believe it's a liberal agenda to try to get people to do this stuff, you know, and I don't see it that way at all, but there are people, especially on the conservative side, to think it's like a, you know, it's a conspiracy. It's a liberal agenda to promote all of this, what they'll call aberrant behavior in a way. Now, one other question I wanted to ask you, what do you think the stereotypes are about transgendered people?
What do you mean? Tell me exactly what you say.
What do you think when somebody sees a transgendered person, they recognize it, or the person says they've done that? What do you think the stereotypes are about that person? You kind of alluded to one earlier. We didn't finish that discussion.
Well, you mean about a man that transitions later, after puberty, you mean?
Yeah, that. Well, what they think of, why the reason, like, see, people have called here and have said, well, you know, they want to be one thing one day, the next day they're going to be something else. It's a whim on their part.
Let me just digress a little and explain a little bit more about that. If someone is transgender, you know, being born of one sex and then or of one gender, we'll say, because, you know, they now define gender and sex as two different things.
Differently, right.
And that's okay, because it is technically, but we, you know, in our early days, we never did that. You were this, you were that. They opened your legs, that's what you were. You know what I mean? Because, you know, there was no mind, there was no child there. But if someone is transitioning from one gender to the next, that's one thing. When you're talking about binary or non-binary, so when someone say, well, but call me they, you know, or maybe they're wearing a dress and they have a beard, but my name is Judy, but you know, and some days I'm she and some days I'm they, that's a difficult situation for the world to accept, because we're used to it's either this or that. And if you don't fit in this box or that circle, we don't know what to do with you. And it's a very, and that's what I think they're shining the light on a lot now. And there's a lot of different, I usually say trans asterisk, because it's an umbrella. As far as are people asexual, or are they pansexual or polyamorous? I think all those things have always been there. And this is what I tell people to think about, because they're all down to the sexual part of it, I guess. But if you took 100 people and put them in a room, and you promised up to God there's no bugs and nobody's monitoring and nobody's videoing and nobody's got a camera, and you start talking about your sex life with people, I'll guarantee you, and they knew nobody was going to say anything about it unless they die, okay? I guarantee you it's not just the missionary position. It's not just this. There is so much stuff going on in life. We just don't talk about it, but it's acceptable to our family, to our friends, or whoever you're with. But somehow, because this is there, and yes, there's a spotlight on it at this time and place, you know, all of a sudden, it becomes bigger than I would like to see it. I think people should be accorded respect. If you're not sure, you know, when you're meeting someone, I always just ask them what's your pronouns, and then that puts you in the place where you don't have to say something that will make you feel awkward. They'll say my pronouns are he or she, and then you know. I mean, you may not like that if you see that, but they're at least, you know, saying, hey, this person at least gets it. They're treating me with respect, because that's all anybody really wants,
so
is respect.
There's a stereotype, though, that guys who trans to be a woman or act that
transition,
way, they just want to they want to be voyeurs. How do you answer that?
Well, you know, are they? I don't know. I mean, en masse, I don't see that. Could there be one person here or one person there, or they somehow have the camera on that particular person at this moment in time and blow it up all over the news? But from my dealings and from my going around all over the country and just speaking either online or in person, I don't really run into too many of that. Probably almost virtually nothing. But again, that's the one thing they want to say. Everybody's like this. Everybody's like that. But that's not the case. And that's kind of like the linchpin that they stand upon on their soapbox to start talking about. But It's not that way. And I know a lot of older trans women, that's people who are born as a male, they've been married, they have kids or whatever it may be, and they transition later in life, and all they want to do is either A, continue their job and not get fired, okay, because it's the same person, all right, and just go live their life. You know, somebody who's out there just trying to join the bandwagon because they can fit in. It's an appropriate time in life to just sort of slide in and do something that's just so unconscionable. They're not really someone who's in that community. They're trying to get away with something, if I'm understanding what you're saying.
Yeah, actually. So I guess since people aren't calling you, I'm asking questions that I think they would ask
That's
you
okay.
if they were
it's
calling.
Fine.
So what about, you know, one of the big controversies is transgendered people in sports.
Right,
A guy trans to become a girl, and then they play a girl's sport, and they say that that's unfair. Once somebody transitions, yeah. Okay, are they still the what they were before, or are they not what they were before?
Well, this is where, you know, the biology and the science and those things, you know, there's certain things that are you know, you can't refute what's going on. I mean, let's face it. If a child is 8 years old before they hit puberty, right? That's a different scenario.
Yeah.
But if you're all of a sudden, you've already, you know, you've been taking testosterone, because I know it's the University of Pennsylvania swimmer. I don't know her name. But if you're taking testosterone and you got really big muscles, because let's face it, men are built differently than women, especially in their latter years. When they're younger, every little kid's a gangly-looking kid, right? Because nothing has really happened in the sense of giving them an advantage over something. This is my opinion, okay?
Sure.
And they fought very hard for Title IX, and I don't know what's going on with that and why they're going against it. That's all political, and it's not my thing. But I feel that a woman who has fought her whole life to be where she is, and then in the swimming incident, and then comes in and takes it, that woman will never get where she should be, and will never get the accolades, because as long as there's someone in there that you know, what can I tell you, that doesn't, I feel doesn't belong, and I'll probably get a lot of grief from the community, but you know, I feel the same way Caitlin does in that instance, and she spoke out about it, and I happen to agree with her. You know, she said women ask me all day, every day, to go play golf with them. And she says, no, I won't, because she knows she can hit that ball 100 yards beyond them, and it's not right. I mean, you have to know where it is and where it isn't. It's not, I have to say, it's not all or nothing. And that's what, I believe that's what they're trying to do. With kids in elementary school, and junior high, and every school and every state has their interscholastic, you know, sports associations, that whatever their rules are, and of course they're not all the same, you have to abide by that. But once you're, you know, already playing football, or, you know, and you decide, okay, you know, I don't want to play men's lacrosse, I want to play women's lacrosse, and I've been on estrogen for a year, but the body, the heart, the lungs, the hands, the height, it's already there, and no estrogen in the world is going to be able to take that away.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be up for them to kick around in the bucket and figure out how to deal with that. But I think, you know, we fought, and I was around with Title IX, because back in the day, I coached the women's tennis team at Boston University, because they didn't have the Title IX status yet. So I know what it's like for women to have to, you know, come that way. And like I said, that's something, you know, I may be cutting my grave early, but that's something I can't stand behind, because I think there is a difference to an extent.
Yeah. So, Seth, reassignment surgery always necessary, or does it always take place if somebody is a trans individual?
No, there's a lot. Well, first off, it's up to the individual. You know, it's kind of like it's up to them. They may not want surgery, or they may only do part of surgery, or don't do the other part of surgery. It's how you feel. I guess it's how your mind perceives your body and what you want to look at and how you feel. You know, you want to identify when you look in the mirror every day. A lot of it is and is not covered by insurance. And if it's not, it's extremely costly. And I know a lot of people that have done some surgery and not all surgeries. It's really, I don't want to say it's Chinese smorgasbord, but it's not required. Some people never do it, and it's got to be a individual, you know, response from each person.
Mm-hmm. So a couple things here. So, and I don't know whether these are proper to ask you, but I will anyway.
Yeah, sure.
The proper terminology. I mean, there's terms. There's transgender. There's transsexual. There's transvestite. There's bisexual. There's right. Trans. What is the proper terminology for somebody who's
transsexual? Changed? Is not used anymore. Transvestite is not used anymore.
Okay.
And the old term hermaphrodite's not used anymore. That's intersex.
Okay.
Okay. You know, they change different terminology. Transgender is like, you know, you're a transgender person. You know, and now sometimes now they're flipping that around. It used to be like you're a transgender man or you're a transgender female. Now they're trying to say you're a female who's transgender. I mean, you know, I myself say what I gotta say, and I don't try to hurt anybody. I don't try and inflict anything, but I can't keep up with all the things that are changing faster than the sun rising and setting.
Okay.
But the reality is someone doesn't transgender. Someone transitions, okay? That's the terminology. If you're doing anything going from one to the other, you're transitioning, okay? If someone's a trans man or a trans female, it means that they were born of the opposite gender and they're transitioning to that. So trans male means you were born female and you're transitioning to male. Now, a lot of people don't identify as a trans male. I'm out in public. I'm a man. I sign any forms. I'm a man. It's nobody's business. I mean, yes, I'm speaking publicly to who knows how many people today, but that's okay. I'm all right with that, you know, but I don't like labels. Mm-hmm. That's me. Okay. And I think that hurts a lot of people.
All right. So one of my final couple things. First of all, I think people don't truly understand the emotional pain that somebody goes through, either as
right,
a kid
yeah.
or finally acknowledging that as an adult. How do we help people through their emotional pain? Because, you know, they're so easily judged by everyone, especially if
right.
it looks like it's obvious. Let's suppose it was a
right, yes,
a,
yes.
You know, a man who changes to a woman, they still right. in some cases look very manly. And so they get ridiculed. So how do you help somebody with that emotional pain?
Well, I mean, you know, when you transition, okay, I mean, I'm making a bold statement by saying you're doing this the right way and you're taking the steps that are put out by the WPATH, which is the World Professional Association of Transgender Health, the standards of care, and you go through that and you go through therapy, you know, this is something that you discuss. I mean, you know, we always can have setbacks. Like, I can go along for 2 years, and then all of a sudden something happens, and you got to go talk to somebody, or you figure out how to do it. I mean, I always used to say, and this has nothing to do with transgender people, but I always used to say a neurotic is a therapist's dream, because they can always going to keep coming into you for some kind of problem. But some people go out there, they'll be good for about a month or a year, and then something will happen that will trigger them and set them off. And a lot of support groups, you know, are around, especially today online. Where I'm involved is PFLAG Jersey Shore. You know, we talk about it, and there's other people there that can help them because, oh, you know, I went through that. I did that. I mean, anything that a trans person would go through mentally would be no different than someone else who's got issues with maybe they got let go of a job and it's bothering them, or they had a divorce, or maybe they have a child that, you know, is paralyzed from the waist down, whatever it is. Pain doesn't necessarily have to show outwardly, and that's for everybody in life. It's not just transgender people.
You know, our names are really important to us. We identify
right.
ourselves
yeah.
by our name. So what about the
right.
idea of somebody who is called one name when they're in the first gender, and when they transition, they have a different name? What should we be calling the person when they transition, and how important is that?
Well, I mean, it depends on if you're talking about kids in school, you're talking about somebody in life or wherever. If they're coming out at work, they're going to go into either whether it's HR or their boss. I'm not sure. Every place is different when they have the guts to do it. And they're going to say, this is what I'm doing. This is my thing. I'm not going to be called Judy anymore. I'm going to be calling Jim. You know, you know, and that's how they do it. And then, of course, you got to, whatever you do legally, you know, change your name in court, change your birth certificate, change your Social Security. There's all different, your passport, whatever it is. They all have forms out there now, and the way you go about it. Like if you get married and you change your name, you got to go through all that stuff. It's almost similar to that.
Do you think that young people are more accepting of this today than it was, let's say, when you were transitioning? Because, I mean, you can imagine a kid who goes through this transition, they may lose friends because their friends may not understand, and then they become very lonely.
A kid? I lost friends I knew for 30 years. You think they knew you?
Okay.
I knew that was going to happen. I didn't know who it would be. Who would drop off the roof, but I knew who it is. Kids today are way more accepting. Because even in general, anything flies with little kids unless you taint them and you indoctrinate them to not be accepting of anything in life, not just transgender people. But kids, they don't care. I mean, when I try to tell my friends, kids who were young, that this is what I was happening after I was finished, that, you know, their answer was, well, let's go out to eat lunch. That's the end of the discussion. You know, kids seem to take things, you know, very lightly. Because they don't know the world, they don't know what's coming at them, if you know what I mean. And so they just take everything lightly, and they don't care. And most kids don't care if you're a boy or a girl. They don't really ask a lot of questions, depending on their age. They say, okay, you're now Uncle Jim now, you know, or whatever it is.
So, Seth, in just a few more minutes that we have left here, unless we get some callers, how do you coach parents to be aware of this could be happening? How do you recognize a kid who is struggling with this identity issue that we're talking about? How does a parent recognize that, or a grandparent?
Okay, so here's a couple things, because that's a loaded question that can have a lot of different answers. Don't know what the relationship is with the kids and the parents in general. A lot of parents close their eyes to it and think it's going to go away. If it's a young kid, you just observe. You observe, because someone who truly, you know, may identify as a different gender, even though they're younger, because like I said earlier, they're truthful in what they are. They're going to stamp their feet and do what they want to do because they don't understand that they have to be politically correct in the house or anything. And you're going to see it because it's insistent, persistent, and consistent behavior. It doesn't go away. It's almost nagging when you have younger kids. You'll see it. They'll be screaming and yelling about wearing that dress no matter what you do, and there's no consoling, or vice versa. You know, and even some boys, you know, you may find, you know, with the high heels and the shoes and everything, and that could be a phase. It's possible. You know, everybody, we know people that have done that as we grew up, but you know what? And some of those could have been transgender, you know, females. We don't know. They're going to be relentless. You're going to see signs, whether you accept it or not, it's a different story. Now, some people will say, gee, you know, she looks so beautiful. She had long hair. And I've noticed this too. And kids will come out, they'll first say, I'm non-binary. Because it's easy to say I'm a boy one day and a girl next day. And then if the parents accept it, okay. Then maybe they may say I'm gay. Because, you know, it's easier to accept gay people than it is trans. And then eventually they work their way into being transgender. I've seen that time after time after time because they're testing the waters. They're kids. They don't have any money. They have no place to live, nowhere to buy food. So some of it is, I want to tell you what I feel, but I'm smart enough to know that maybe dad will be mad or mom will say this, because they've lived in the house and they see how people react. They see how they react to the TV. They react to certain things. You know, kids are smarter than we give them credit.
So should parents ask their kids questions about it, or just, as you say, allow it to play out? And if it's true, it will be consistent.
Yeah, I that's my better thing, because sometimes if you ask a child, depending on their age, not six or seven, you know, because like I said, the real young kids just, you know, innocently will. You know, display it. But someone who's smart enough, they're in school, they're on the internet and stuff like that, you know, I mean, I did that with my mother, and there was no internet. You know, when I was 18, she came in and she goes, and I don't forget it. She said to me, I can handle it if you're pregnant, but if you tell me you're a lesbian, I don't know what I'm going to do. It was 1971.
Wow.
I have never forgotten it. So if you don't approach kids right, and I don't know the relationship between the parent and the kid, you can alienate them. The one thing I would say to parents out there, if there's an issue and your child comes to you, and, you know, and they can speak about it, they're not 3 years old, and they're thinking about it, is whatever it takes from you, and I have it on my website. You can look at my blog. Don't make a face. Don't get angry.
Should you, and you said when you were a kid, you couldn't wait to get home to take your dress off and wear guys' clothes.
Right.
Should parents insist on their kids staying whatever they were biologically born as?
Well, or they shouldn't, but they do. And I've seen a lot of damage with that.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of damage. Especially sometimes the fathers, especially if it's a boy that wants to transition to a girl, men have a hard time with that. And they force their kids to wear something, and all it does is add to their issues and add to the anger and puts a sieve, you know, in the family. It's not easy, and that's what I was going to say a second ago. If your kid comes to you, be thankful. They're actually coming to you. It takes a lot of guts as a little kid or whatever, teenager, you know, depending on your relationship, to actually sit down and talk to you. And even if it's against your religion or it's against this or you kind of know or you know, let them talk to you and try to be careful not to give faces, because I'm going to tell you, like I just said to you 2 minutes ago, there's certain things I remember my mother saying 50 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's things they won't forget. And if you start to alienate them, then they're never going to come to you. And now you're going to put a huge sieve with no bridge.
So is there any danger, and this may sound a little bit off the wall here too, is there any danger, because a lot of times little boys love their moms, they like to mimic their moms, and maybe
right,
so the
yeah,
mom,
sure.
What if the mom paints the boy's fingernails with nail polish or puts lipstick on? Is that going to hurt that kid's identity? Is it going to make them be confused about themselves, or is it just no big deal about that?
I mean, you know, that's another blanket statement. I can say one thing one way and one the other, and then someone said, "Well, you told me." Look, I know a lot of parents now, like a lot of fathers, they'll be playing tee with their kids, and they want to paint their nails, and they do that, and you just look at it and you look at it in jest. They're just playing. They're young. They're curious. They're learning things. Okay, you'll soon know. All right. If it's going one way or the other, because a lot of parents say, "Oh, I shouldn't have done that. It's my fault." Guess what? It's not your fault.
Yeah.
Your child knows their identity and they will be what they will be. And also in hopes that parents will help guide them. Because remember, when a child transitions, so do the parents.
Hmm.
Because that child is no longer maybe going to walk down the aisle as a bride. They may walk down the aisle as a groom. You may not have kids. Everybody has the White House, the picket fence, and all that kind of nonsense. That's what they're brought up. That's their dreams. And your dreams are sort of raining down the wall and dripping. So you will change. I mean, if you expect to stay intact with the family, you will change. And that's okay, because guess what, Nick? Life is about change.
Yep.
Didn't we do it in the last few years, whether we liked it or not?
Absolutely, Seth. So when should people seek help, or if they should seek it at all? When and where should they seek help for this?
So, like I said, your audience is easy. It's around Philadelphia. So, again, I say CHOP because it's a children's hospital. This is what we're talking about if you have children. It's not tomorrow or the next day. It's when you feel you really need some guidance, somebody to oversee and just take a look at the kid and have a conversation with the kid and tell you what their perspective is. It's just a information gathering kind of thing, and also to allay some of the tenseness and the anxiety maybe parents feel. And you know, you go from there. Again, it's not something that happens tomorrow, no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with little kids, because you're right. They can, you know, the next day say, "Oh, you know, give me that pink dress," or, you know, whatever. But again, they're belligerent when they know what they want, because their mind is telling them.
Yeah.
And parents will be able to tell, you know what I mean, when the kid every day, morning and night, you know, "I want, you know, my, I don't know, my football," or just something that you know is extremely consistent. It's not like they say, "I want a bike," but the next week they want the little motor car. You know, it doesn't change that quickly.
Right.
Because the kid's head, it's all that's what's spinning in their head. It's like, "Mommy's, you know, this is what they're thinking, probably. Mommy's got this pink dress and I don't want to wear it." You know, and there's so, listen, we go through 85,000 thoughts a day in our head.
Mm.
we just don't think about it because there's probably only 5% of them that really gnaw at us and really get us going, but the rest just grows and comes.
Well, so, Seth, let me tell you, this has been very, very incredibly interesting and informative for everybody. I think a lot of times what happens on a show like this, people don't call because they're just fascinated to hear what the guest has to say. And so I appreciate you being exactly what you were for us. Now, would you want anybody to contact you, or is that something
do? No. I mean, because, listen, I consult with people all the time. Sometimes in families, I create a roadmap of where it could potentially go, doesn't necessarily go. And I think sometimes people just need to talk to someone.
Yeah. So they can contact you through your website. Would that be fine?
Yeah. There's a contact form there. Right. Just, you know, reach out to me and sort of give me an idea of what you're talking about. And just to say to your audience, I understand, you know, if you're learning and there's probably a lot of questions that you want to ask me. And Nick knows this because Nick will have me back. Believe me, there's no question you can answer me that I can't come back and try and help you.
Well, look, and I know that to be true. So let me give you a final thought. Give us a final thought before you leave. What would you want to leave our audience with before you say goodbye today?
I just think I hope that they were educated. I hope that maybe I could have shifted. You know, my idea is navigating transgender challenges and shifting perspectives.
Yeah.
And I hope that some people will just take a different look on it, because I've walked that walk and I'm talking it. I'm not some figurehead sitting behind a book telling you because they've seen so many people. I'm there. I'm the person that has the mental chatter. I'm the person that was through it when there was nothing, and I survived to be a strong person. The only thing I can say to those out there now is that we are in a world that's enlightened. And you're not going to be me. You're not going to wander around looking for something that you'll never find, okay? There are many, many places to go for help. You know, and like I said, if you're an adult, there's also Mazzoni Clinic that's outside of Philly. There's a lot of different places now. If you're in New Jersey's got a lot of stuff going on, too, between Robert Wood and the Proud Clinic or Babs Cipressine. New York's got tons of stuff. I think if you look stuff up on the internet today, I would probably tell you that probably 95% of what you see, if you just do transgender in your town or your city, is going to be legit. That's the one thing I know, because you'll notice that the information is repeated across all different sites, and that's when you know you've got the truth.
What do you, I thought I was going to just let you go, but I just thought of something else that I think is pretty important. You know, we had that movement before with somebody like Michelle Bachmann, a politician, and her husband said that you could pray away the gay, you know? How do religious people, from your experience, how do people with strong religious backgrounds relate to this? Or is it the same as in any other circumstance?
No, I mean, they have their issues because religion is first and foremost, and it's a man and it's a woman. And what I say to them is, I understand you, and you're entitled to your belief. But that doesn't mean the person next to you has to be the way you want them to be. And believe you, and I'm going to tell you this, there are many gay people and many transgender people in all the churches everywhere in this world. And people know it, but they accept them as, you know, whoever they are. Now, there'll be some people that won't. I get that. And that's their thing. You know, I'm not worried about it. When I go to heaven, I'm you know, that's it. I don't care. I'm living my life here. I could care less what happens afterwards. Some people aren't that way, and I get it.
Yep.
But you don't have a right to infringe your beliefs on other people, and unfortunately, some people go overboard. But they're going to do that on anything, though, Nick. It just happens to be the topic of the day. They're going to do it on something else. Maybe it's going to be guns, or maybe it's going to be, you know, whatever it is. There's always something, and that's okay. If they're comfortable living their life, it's fine, but they don't have the right to infringe upon other people. And I will tell you, a lot of people have changed churches or whatever they've done to be in a place where they don't have to feel tense and anxiety and, you know, who's looking at them when they walk in. So there's many, many places out there that you can go. You may have to just shift a little.
Yeah. So, Seth, all I can say is, I mean, the deepest appreciation for my part, and I'm sure for our audience as well. And thank you for all of this. You gave us so much today, and we'll certainly get you back on again, okay?
Right, and when you get the questions, write them down, because if it's you that has to ask them, you'll have them all written on paper.
That's great, man. Take care of yourself, all right?
All righty. Thanks, Nick.
Yep,
have a great day.
All right, folks.
All right, so long.
Bye. Folks, I don't know about you, but that was just amazing. SethRainess.com, SethRainess.com. You can check his website out, watch some of the videos, some of the talks. He's given a has given a major TED talk, TEDx talk. You'll certainly enjoy listening to that. It's his story in a capsulized form. Now, you know, he spent that entire hour with us. An amazing guest, was open, didn't hide anything, and was 100% honest with us. If you want to continue talking about that, if you have a question or if you have a comment, I'd like to know what you thought about that interview. You can call me right after we take a station ID here. And if you don't want to talk about it, certainly no problem with that either. We'll just go back on to some of the other topics we were discussing. All subjects are always in play. To me, I felt that was important to bring that a topic to the table because we've had some callers in the past make statements that sound, you know, very typical of what people say about this stuff without having any real knowledge about it. Seth was 55 years old when he transitioned. Now, think about what he had to live his entire life with before he made the decision that he had felt for many, many, many years. We'll take a short break. Station ID, I'll play a tune. We'll come back. In the meantime, if you want to talk with me, don't hesitate to pick up.